the Beis HaMikdash. We're now building the Beis HaMikdash in chapter 6. This is it. This is what we've all been waiting for a very long time. We're about to find out, 480 years. We've been waiting for this opportunity. Remember, in this book itself, we've talked about the fact that Shlomo was supposed to do this. It dissipated when his father was alive. We read how in Divrei Hayamim, David actually made a big announcement to the nation as a whole that Shlomo was going to build it. We're going to talk more about David's role and his relevance to it. We saw Shlomo, marry Paro's daughter, and we talked about that as potentially undermining this. We talked about the potential criticism for Shlomo that he hasn't built the Beis HaMikdash yet. We're going to come back to that shortly. But now here we are. If you take a look on your sheet where I wrote outline of Perek 6, it's going to begin with an introductory sentence telling us that construction is underway. Then you get a description of the outer structure of the Beit HaMikdash, the dimensions of the building, followed by God interjecting with a divine message of support. We're going to have to figure out why it's stuck into the middle. It's support slash warning, really. I shouldn't just say support. I should say support and warning. Then we get a description of a lot of cedar wood inside the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo also makes these special kruvim, special cherubs, which aren't in the Mishkan. The Mishkan had its own cherubs. These seem to be different cherubs. And then more woodwork, and presto, 7 years later, we're done. That's it, one chapter. Not even the longest chapter of the book. We just, we've completed the process. Now, as I said to you a minute ago, we are going to need to start skipping some particular elements. Unfortunately, things that I find interesting, in order to be able to cover the greater arc of Shlomo's career. So as an example, there is an outer room added to the Beit HaMikdash which did not exist at all in the Mishkan. It's called the Ulam. What in the world is that doing there? We're not going to get to address it. There are some interesting descriptions, like of the windows in the Beit HaMikdash. They're described as shkufim atumim. Depending on how you translate the words, shakuf can mean transparent, that you can see through it, lahashkif, to look, whereas atum is something that is sealed up. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about the windows and how they were angled to let light in, but you couldn't see in. Maybe it's for defense, maybe it's for light, but also not one we're going to get to. The questions that I want to address in this chapter include the following. Going back to Vanessa's question, where did the plans for this building come from? Why wasn't this just a replica of the Mishkan? Right? You had a Mishkan, make a new Mishkan. Like, why is this different at all? In particular, why is it so tall? This is a huge building. Very, very tall building. What in the world is that about? We're going to see that Shlomo insists on not cutting the stones that they're using in the building. No cutting the stones. They have to be brought in whole from the quarry. What's that about? There is no such requirement in the Torah. One of the key elements that we're also going to discuss, which we talked about earlier in Malachim, and I alluded to it just a minute ago, is the influence of David HaMelech, of King David, on Shlomo's reign. Here we will see his influence on the Beis HaMikdash. So we have a lot to talk about. Rest assured, the fact that we're skipping a couple of points does not mean that we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. You bet we're going to be spending time on this. So we start out in chapter 6, sentence 1. Where we are told, Vayhi v'shmonim shana v'arbameos shana l'tzeis b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. It was 480 years from when the Jews left Egypt. Bashana harvi'is, the fourth year. Now, you have to, this is very funny the way you have to read this sentence. In the fourth year, the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that was in parentheses. Now go back to the fourth year, Limloch Shlomo al Yisrael, of Shlomo's reign over Israel. In other words, it's the fourth year of Shlomo's reign, and it is the second month on the calendar, which is also known as Ziv. We call it Iyar, because we use the Babylonian slash Persian names for the month, something we're going to come back to, I hope. Vayiven Abayis Lashem, and he built the house for God. That is your introductory sentence. Away we go. We're building the Beis HaMikdash. So Already there's something strange here. Is there any other point in Tanakh where we count and say this event happened X number of years since we left Egypt? Not after the beginning of the desert. We stopped doing that pretty quickly.
This event, always do this 400 years, 400 years, 400 years.
This is 480.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Abarbanel notes this. Take a look at source number 6, where he asks, V'lama l'mana l'briyas ha'olam, why didn't you count from creation? V'lo l'man b'ben ha'besarim, or start from bris b'ben ha'besarim, when Hashem made a covenant with Avraham, right? Why didn't you start from then? Since Pesach is coming, right? But why does he think we should count from the covenant between the pieces? Why is that an option? He's thinking in terms of the number of years that the Jews are in Egypt, right? Where we say that it's 210 years, but it's also 400 years, right? That's if you're counting from Bris Bein Habasar, that, or 430 years. But it, the point is that that's where he sees precedent for counting from Bris Bein Habasar. So he says, Ukfiya emes v'hanachon. He says, in truth, lohaya ro'oi limnos kin l'malchus Shlomo al Yisrael. You should just say, it's the fourth year of Shlomo's reign, and be done with it. Ki b'chol ha'sipurim lo yimnu ha'dvarim ki emel shnoz ha'malachim. Lo litiyas Mitzrayim. He says, in every story in Tanakh, it's by the year of the king. In such and such a year of King so-and-so. Why didn't you just do that here? So three different answers. The first answer is, this is normal. There's a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, which I brought you here in source number 7, which says, we always count from Yitzias Mitzrayim until the temple is actually built. And then once it's built, then we start counting from the construction of the temple. It doesn't say why. He simply says, this is so. Take a look at source number 7. Tani Shmuel Upalig. Shmuel, the sage, not the prophet, disagreed with an idea that was presented right before this in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The preceding passage suggested that actually the Torah requires certain dating systems. And he says, no, they change over time. He says, "Bachodesh hashlishi letzeis b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim." In the third month from when the Jews left Egypt, that's when they arrived in Sinai. So says the Torah. So mikan shemon and chadashim litzias Mitzrayim. You see that you count the months from leaving Egypt, the third month since we left. Eli al chadashim shana minayin. How do you know that years also are counted from then? He quotes you again, this time from Parshas Baaloscha, I think. Vaydeber Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shana hashinis. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai desert in the second year from leaving Egypt. Fine. So that means in the beginning of the Egyptian, of the post-Egypt period, they did it. La'achar azman azeminai. And how do you know that it continued afterward? Because at the end of their period in the desert, bishnasa arba'im in the 40th year, letzeis b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim, since they left Egypt. So no, there also it's counting from leaving Egypt. Not just in the beginning. And the Elul Sha'al, a Doros Minayan, and how do you know they did it generations later? Our verse. Our verse has them do it. And then, Mishanib Na'abayis, it's Chilomon on the Binyan. Now, once the house was built, they started counting from its construction and then from its destruction, and so on. So the position of the Talmud Yerushalmi is, this was normal. You don't think of it, maybe, but this is just what they did. They counted from leaving Egypt. Rabbi Yisachar Tamar says, you know, there are midrashim that are different. If you look at source number 8, he quotes you a Sifri that says, no, when they enter, a Sifri is medrash on Bamidbar and Devarim, says, no, when they entered Israel, they started counting from their entry into Israel. They only started out counting from Egypt. So it's not necessarily that this is normal. So I'll give you a second approach. And the second approach is, I think, the most intuitive idea. And that is that it was about the culmination of a process. We started something when we left Egypt. The ark began and it was completed with the temple, with the Beis HaMikdash. So what you're saying is 480 years after this journey started, we arrived. That's what you're trying to say. And I base this idea on a comment by the Pnei Moshe on a different point. He's dealing with a different issue. He's asking the following question. We know the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says that for Jewish kings, we number the years of their reign based on, or the months of their reign first, based on Nisan. And their years based on Nisan as well. Meaning, if a Jewish king takes the throne on Hanukkah, he's in year one until Nisan comes, and now he's in year two. It doesn't matter that you haven't had a full year elapse. We don't go based on when he took the throne. We go based on Nisan. Why do we do that? So the Rabbi Moshe Margalit in the Pnei Moshe commentary on the Talmud Yerushalmi offers an explanation which I think is fascinating. See, we get a Pesach Far Torah in here after all. He says, Ubedin hu kach. He said it makes sense. He says, leaving Egypt was the start of our monarchy, in the sense that, Shem lo kein, if we hadn't left Egypt, hayinu meshubadim, we would have been enslaved. Lefichach nasa zecher letzias Mitzrayim, so that became a memorial for the Exodus. Shekol melech mimalcha Yisrael monu lo mi Nisan, ulamalchei umos ha'olam monu lehen mi Tishrei. That for Jewish kings, we count from Nisan, non-Jewish kings, we count from Tishrei. Why do we do Jewish kings differently? Because this is the start of Jewish monarchy. Jewish freedom creates Jewish monarchy. And my step that I'm adding here is that, or, you know, applying it to our discussion, leaving Egypt is what enables building the Beis HaMikdash. That's the idea. Rabbi Amnon Bazak takes you another step with it. I was going to put it on the sheet, but I was, as you can see, running out of space, so I took it out. But if you remember in Uz Yashir, the song at the sea, it's the verse you want, if you wanted to look it up, is Shemot chapter 15, sentence 17. Is the specific verse that I'm thinking of here, where we say, I'm just flipping to it in my Tanakh here, we say, Tivi'emo v'sita'emo bahar nachalascha, God, bring them, the Jewish people, and plant them on the mountain of your portion. Machon l'shivtecha, hear the words, machon l'shivtecha pa'alta Hashem. God, you made a machon, an established place, l'shiv techa, for your dwelling. Mikdash, a sanctuary, Hashem, konenu yadecha, your hands formed it. So already back then, there's a vision of a mikdash. But not just that. In your Sefer Malachim, take a look, please, at chapter 8, sentence 13. This is when Shlomo dedicates the Beis HaMikdash. And look at the term he uses for it. Chapter 8, sentence 13. He says, Bano vanisi beis zivul lach. I built a beit zivul, we'll just call it a home right now, for you, God. Machon l'shivtecha olamim. An established place for your dwelling forever. Machon l'shivtecha was the same language that was used in Uz Yashir. Machon l'shivtecha. So Rabbi Bazak's point is the point that we're making, which is this ark started when we left Egypt, and it's being completed now. And so it makes sense that you say, 480 years, stop the timer, we did it. That's a second approach. And then you have Don Isaac Abarbanel, and I think this is what Rose was trying to get at. She just needed a different number, not 400, but 480, which is, there are three temples. There's the Mishkan, which is built, you know, the year after we get out of Egypt. There is the first Beis HaMikdash, and there is the second Beis HaMikdash, right? They are built 480 years apart. You could argue that it's really 479 between the first and the between getting out of Egypt and then. It's 480 from when they got out of Egypt. It's 479 from when they built the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is really built in the beginning of the second year. They dedicated in Nisan of the second year. But it's the end of the first year. And it was done before then. They just hadn't dedicated it. So I don't know. Whatever you want to do with it, take a look at Abarbanel in source number 10. He says, and I'm going to read out my English translation because, again, it's long. For when Bnei Yisrael left Egypt, they built the Mishkan. From then until construction of the house which Shlomo built, which Solomon built, 480 years passed. And from then as well, another 480 years passed until the house of God was again built by Zerubbabel. How do you know that? Because we are taught that the first temple stood for 410 years, and then there was a 70-year exile. So 410 plus 70 equals 480. That's where you get the number from. There are chronology issues we've discussed on other occasions, but this is the straight read. And just as the house that Solomon built... Oh, let me just pause there. So you understand the chronology. 480 years from the building of the first one to the building... From the building of the Mishkan to the building of the first one. 480 years from the building of the first one until the building of the second one. So what? So Abarbanel says... The point of having this period of time in between, that it should be parallel, is to say that Hashem treats them all as equal and beloved, even though they're not really worthy. The Mishkan is built by Moshe. The first Beis HaMikdash is built by Shlomo. The second Beis HaMikdash is built by Zerubbabel, with very different nations involved. The Jews are of different generations, lots of different things going on. So he says, continuing in Abarbanel, and just as the house that Solomon built in terms of the act and in terms of the actor, meaning the sanctity of the house, that's the act, and the perfection of Solomon who built and created it, was immeasurably lower in holiness and godliness than that Mishkan which Moshe made with its holiness and the holiness of Moshe Rabbeinu. So too, in that same ratio, the construction of the second house, and Zerubbabel built it, were lower in holiness and closeness to God and divine inspiration than the building Solomon made. How great are your deeds, God! Your plans are deep. You agreed to the deeds of three houses made by Moshe, Solomon, and Zerubbabel, and they had an equal and similar time for each one. Even though the three of them had a recognizable descent in spirituality, holiness, and godliness, and in similar ratios of descent, In other words, they kept getting worse, and Hashem accepts them anyway. By the way, gotta wonder a little bit, what event was 480 years after the construction of the second one? Anybody know? What event took place 480 years after the second one was built? I'll give you a hint. We are taught, traditional chronology, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 68 or 70 after 420 years. So what's 60 years later, roughly? The Bar Kokhba revolt, which Rabbi Akiva believes is going to lead to a third Beis HaMikdash. Worth thinking about. Okay, two other notes, and then I'll take questions and comments. Number one, we note here that Shlomo started to build it in the fourth year of his reign. As I mentioned in the beginning of this chapter, we're highlighting his delay, right? He didn't do it year one. And at the beginning of chapter 3, we said he's criticized for waiting. However, I want to note for you, we're going to come back to this at the end of chapter 7, but there's another school of thought in some commentaries. You see, we're going to see shortly that David HaMelech provided materials for the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, and Shlomo didn't use them. Shlomo doesn't use them. So some commentators, we'll come back to this, say that that's why Shlomo needs 3 years. He's building up his own supply of materials because he doesn't want to use his father's materials. That's going to be a fun topic. So that's one piece. The last note on it is the name of the month. We call it Chodesh Ziv, the month of Ziv. Ziv is radiance, brilliant light. That's what Ziv is. It's a term for beauty and a term for light. So take a look at source number 11, where the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah gives us two potential sources for this name. Why is this month named Ziv? Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Minayin sheben Nisan noldu avos. How do we know that the avos were born in Nisan? Avot meaning Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Now, he doesn't literally mean all three, because it's actually a debate between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer about who was born in Nisan and who was born in Tishrei. I shouldn't even go into it, into that piece of it. How do you know that in Nisan the avot were born? Shenamar, he quotes our verse. And it was in the 480th year from when they left Egypt, in the fourth year, in the month of Ziv. So what? B'yerach shenoldu bo Ziv tanei olam. It was the season, not quite the month, but the season when the Ziv tanei olam, when the world's radiant ones, meaning the Avot, were born. They were born in that season. His point is not to say the month precisely, because his point isn't really that. His point is whether it was in Nisan or in Tishrei. Is it in spring or is it in fall? So he says it's clearly springtime, because that's why we call it Ziv. To which the Gemara says, but wait a minute. The month of Tishrei is named Yerach Ha'etanim, the month of the strong ones. We're going to see that, God willing, in chapter 8. And we understand that to refer to the Avot. So I don't understand. How can you tell me that they were born in Iyar if they were born in the month of Tishrei? That's why it's called Eitanim. To which he answers, no, that's not what Eitanim means. Eitanim does mean strong. But Hasem Ditekifi B'mitzvos. That's because the month is strong in mitzvos, because you have all these holidays that are going on in Tishrei. So no, they're not born in Tishrei. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. Good. But if you're telling me you believe that Tishrei is the month when the Avos were born, right? That's your belief. What are you going to do? Oh, you know what? I just realized something. I've been noticing people freezing off and on. And I just realized I never plugged in the wired internet. Huh.
You've got to repeat.
Yeah, no, I just realized that I never plugged in the wire.
Sorry.
There we go. Okay. In answer to the question that I see in the chat, Herod did not build the second temple. Herod was at the end of the second temple, and he expanded it and built it further, but he's not the builder. But I'm going to repeat now, because yeah, I realized I forgot to plug in the wire for the internet. I've been going just on the Wi-Fi. So sorry about that. What was the last thing people heard?
I think we're just starting to explain about the months and the radiating and the fathers, how happy.
Okay.
The
yeah. Sorry.
The
so there's a debate in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah as to whether key events happened in Nisan or in Tishrei. Creation of the world. Is the world created in the state of fall, or is the world created in the state of spring? Right? We know that Toronto was created in the state of fall. Right? It's perpetually winter or about to become winter. But the question is, the world as a whole, was it created in an autumn circumstance, or was it created in a spring circumstance? That's what we want to know. So one of the debates is, when were the patriarchs born? And again, it's not really a debate about Yitzchak. Yitzchak, we know, is Pesach time. The question is really Abraham and Yaakov. So Rabbi Yeshua says, they're born in Nisan. Why? Because Nisan is at that time of year, the springtime, which also has the month of Iyar, which is called Ziv, meaning radiance, brilliance. That is the month, B'yerach shanol dubo ziv tanei olam. That is the month when the radiant ones were born. So Iyar is part of this season when the Avot were born. That's the idea. To which the Gemara then challenges, I'm saying it a little quicker this time around, but the Gemara then challenges, in chapter 8 we are going to learn that the month of Tishrei is named Yerach HaEtanim, the month of the Eitanim. Eitan means strong, steadfast. And we're going to see the view that says that that means that the Avot were born in Tishrei, because it's called Yerach HaEtanim. To which the Gemara says, you don't have to say that. Maybe that month is called the month of these, the strong ones, the mighty ones, because it has all the mitzvos in it. Because Tishrei has in it Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, right? That's what makes it Eitanim, not that the Avot were born then. To which the Gemara says, but wait a minute, you have the opposing view. The opposing view says they were born in Tishrei. According to the opposing view, why is Iyar called Ziv? Why does this month get the name Ziv, radiant? To which the Gemara answers, it's about the radiance of the trees. The trees are producing leaves. And then the Gemara goes into the bracha that is supposed to be said in Nisan if you live someplace where you're going to see trees bringing forth flowers in Nisan. Right? If you're fortunate enough that, you didn't just leave that place, but now you're actually in a place where you get trees with flowers in Nisan. Don't despair. There is a strong view that says you can make this bracha even in Sivan if you see trees with flowers. So, you may need to do that. Even in a leap year. But anyway, the point for our purposes is this. This month that we're talking about, when they start to build the Beis HaMikdash, is the month called Ziv. It is Iyar, that's the Persian Babylonian name for it, which the Jews bring out of exile. And it's also known as month number two, because that was how we started counting months, was months had numbers, right? It was just, this is the first month, this is the second month, this is the third month. So Rabbi Amnon Bazak makes a really interesting point that I was not aware of until I read it and then said, wait, I have to check that. And I checked it, and it seems to be true. Throughout Tanakh, months are numbered rather than named, except sometimes you get these Babylonian Persian names, right? In Megillas Esther you get it. In Sefer Haggai you get it. Right? We have certain months, I think Haggai, you get it. We have certain months where, certain books in Tanakh, we mention the Persian Babylonian names. However, only in our section with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash do we find Hebrew names at all. That's it. These names, here we will see three Hebrew names for months. Ziv for the month of Iyar, Bul for the month of Cheshvan, and Eitanim for the month of Tishrei. That's it. No others. So, Rabbi Bazak makes a very interesting suggestion, which I can't think is true. But nonetheless, it's a fascinating suggestion. He says maybe only these 3 months get Hebrew names, because they are the months associated with milestones in the construction process of the Beis HaMikdash. Take a look at source number 12 of my translation there. He says, Yesh bepirkei ha-mikdash tofa'a yichudit. There is, in the chapters about the sanctuary, a unique manifestation, v'meshenogea l'shmos ha-chodoshim, regarding the names of the months. Milavad kinuyehem ha-kvuim b'mispar sudar. Aside from the names that are just numerical, right? Ha-chodesh ha-sheni, shlishi, etc., in the chapters about the Mikdash, about the sanctuary, they also get unique names. Shmot Ivriyim Elu, these Hebrew names, Einam Nizkarim, Bishum Makom Acher B'Mikra, they don't appear anywhere else in Tanakh. I did go looking. Chodshei B'niyat HaMikdash Zachu L'Shemot Mishal Atzmam, the months of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash get their own names. It appears that this is some kind of a special celebration. As though there's a special annual calendar just for this season, just for this period in the on the calendar. Very interesting idea. So what we've seen so far in chapter 6 is that we're counting from the departure from Egypt, which either is just the normal thing that they did at that time. That's the Yerushalmi. Or, which is a culmination of a process to say that it's 480 years since we started towards building the Beis HaMikdash and now we're here. Just like we count for the months, we count for Jewish kings from Nisan to say that the ability to have a monarchy started in Nisan. Or, Abarbanel's idea, we emphasize the 480-year leaps in order to say Hashem is willing to consider each of these houses equal, even though they're decidedly not equal. We keep descending. And then the other two notes, Shlomo starts only in year 4. We've seen that as a bad thing, but that might change. And Chodesh Ziv is a special Hebrew name with potential meanings that the Gemara identifies for it, but it's only in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash that we get these Hebrew names of months, Ziv, Bul, and Eitanim. Questions and comments. Janine.
What about Chodesh Ha'aviv?
So Chodesh Ha'aviv, I think, is usually assumed not to be like the name of the month. It's not that the month was Aviv. It's a Chodesh which is in a season, which we identify as Aviv. I hear how you could say otherwise, but that's not usually the way that it's taken. Maybe because of that Hey Hayadiyah at the beginning. Maybe that's why it makes it the month of the spring as opposed to not named. Maybe. Chana.
No, I just thought the word Aviv mentioned in the Makot, Kesera Aviv, Rachita Aviv, I can't remember, which Aviv is actually a name of the season when it's already ripe.
Right. So the use of it there is just to say that it's that this is fresh growth. Ki asara aviv apishta giv'ol, that it's sort of in this inflexible stage of growth.
When the natural season of aviv.
Right.
Yeah.
Others?
Is there any other significance in the Tanakh for the 480?
Not that I know of. I wondered about that. Like, it would have been good if it was like 490, because we love sevens and multiples of sevens. And we could have done a lot with that. But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, look, we can always play gematria games. You know? We could always say, well, 480 is pot, and bread, and tough, because it's tough. We can do whatever we want when we're playing gematria games. But no, I can't think of another 480 association that would make sense to fit with it. Sandra? No? No? Okay, Ricky. No, you muted yourself.
This is very profound. How many classes are we missing? One or two?
So, like I said in the beginning earlier, we resume on the 27th. We resume on the 27th. Okay. So, we still have 5 minutes. I don't want to stop now. I want to start us on the next piece, especially because Vanessa asked the question. Who designed this building? Where did this design come from? So take a look at your sheet, please, at source number 13, or look in your Tanakh, where you can even have a translation if you're using one with a translation. Divrei Hayamim Aleph, chapter 28. This is part of David's public proclamation about the Beis HaMikdash. And David here presents Shlomo with everything. Plans, materials, the division of the Kohanim into shifts. It's all here. I didn't bring you a translation. You can use it in your Tanakh. But I'm going to translate it quickly, reading it through. David gave to Shlomo, his son, the form of the ulam, the outer room of the Beis HaMikdash, and its batim, its different rooms inside, and ginzakav, the storage areas, like giniza, aliotav, the upper floors, chadarav apnimim, the inner rooms, and he gives also machlakot ha-kohanim v'leviim, the divisions of the kohanim and the leviim for all their tasks, and he gives him the gold, and he gives him the gold for this, and the gold for that, and all the different implements that are going to use gold. And then at the end, key line, Hakol biksav miyad Hashem, all in writing from the hand of God, alai hiskil, on me, David says, on me, He gave insight, kol malachos hatavnis, all of the acts that will need to be done for this building, for this structure. So David has it, miyad Hashem, from the hand of God. Well, how did that happen? So the Midrashim treat this as an actual scroll, which like has text in it, and from which we learn the structure. Take a look at source number 14, Hebrews to the bottom of one side, English top of the next side, actually Hebrews on the next side also, in which we are told, there's a pasuk which we saw, those who were in the Shmuel share with me, in chapter 12 in Shmuel, when Shmuel gives his retirement speech. And he says, Ve'ata, and now, Hisyatzivu, he says, you should stand, he's addressing the nation, Ve'ishafta itchem, and I will judge with you. So Rabbi Yirmiyah quotes Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak to say, Megillat Beit HaMikdash Semasar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe Ba'amida. This was the scroll of the Beit HaMikdash, the plans, the nuclear codes that Shmuel is passing on. The scroll of the Beit HaMikdash that God gave Moshe standing, when Moshe was standing, when Hashem said to Moshe, Ve'ata po amodi madi, you stand here with me. Amad Moshe Mesor LeYoshua Ba'amida. Moshe stood and gave it to Yehoshua when standing, as Hashem says to Moshe, Kras Yehoshua, call Yehoshua, v'hityatzvu, and you shall stand before the nation. Amad Yehoshua Mesorah LeZakenim Ba'amida. Yehoshua stood and gave it to the elders standing. When we are told at the end of Yehoshua's career, Vayesov Yehoshua's kol shivtei Yehoshua Shechema, Yehoshua gathered all of the tribes to Shechem. I just lost the place. Vayisyatzvu lifnei Elokim, and they stood before God, the last chapter in Yehoshua. Amdu zekanim misarua leneviim ba'amida, and the zekanim, the elders, gave it to the prophets standing. Ve'ata hisyatzvu, that's the one in Shmuel. Amdu neviim misarua leDavid ba'amida, and here's the big problem. The neviim arose, and they gave it to David standing. Ve'les la Kariya or Kriya. There's no verse. We do not have a verse in which Shmuel says to David, okay, I am now giving you the plans for the Beis HaMikdash. However, Amad David umisar l'Shlomo b'no ba'amida. David stood and gave it to his son Shlomo standing, and he quotes you a pasuk in Tehillim, and then quotes our verse in Psalms. The pasuk in Tehillim does not on its face directly relate. He pleads with God, make me stand, and I will pay them back. That's the literal. In the context of that chapter of Tehillim, is David talking about his enemies who are undermining him. But they take it in this medrash as, Ashalom Alehem, I will complete it for them, meaning the conveying of this scroll with the instructions. But what you do have is David saying in Divrei Hayamim, the text was all biksav, meaning transmitted directly, shenet nabim mesores, it was given by tradition, by transmission. Alai hiskil, he gave me insight. Melamed shenas nabaruach hakodesh, or shenit nabaruach hakodesh, it was given with divine inspiration. So the medrash he is saying was passed down across generations, and that's the way that the sages look at it. So that you have multiple times in the Gemara where they ask, why did they build it this way in the Beis HaMikdash? Why didn't they build it that way? And the answer is, God told them to build it this way. As an example of this point, you know, I don't want to rush this. Rushing this is a mistake. I just feel bad because we're going to take a break for a couple of weeks for Pesach. But we'll see. Like, the Gemara takes it as Hashem told David, here are the rules. And what we'll see, I guess, after Pesach is the idea that this was an old tradition of how to build it makes a lot of sense. It's internally consistent within Tanakh. And you'll see what I mean, God willing, next time. Sandra, you had a question.
What is the significance that this was done in Amida?
Yeah, so I was going to mention that. Thank you for reminding me. What the Medrash is emphasizing is the dignity of it, the special character of it, that it specifically has to be done while standing. That's the idea. Yeah, there's a lot more to be said about that, but that's what's being conveyed. So, God willing, next time, after Pesach, we will continue from here. We still have a lot to see in Shlomo's Ark, but I think we only have 8 shiurim in which to see it. So we resume April 27th. We will have one other week off, and that will be Shavuos is Sunday, Monday, outside of Israel. So we will not have a shiur the day after Shavuos. But other than that, we're going to go straight until late June, and hopefully as many of you as possible will be there in person at Shaare Shamayim. I would love to be able to learn with you face-to-face.
April 27th is a Wednesday.
I'm 26th. If April 27th is a Wednesday, then I meant April 26th, yes. Thank you for catching
me. Okay, can I just ask you, do we see the Amidah? You know, can I ask you, the Amidah, you know how we stand?
Yeah.
Related to this?
So it's related to the general position that standing is respectful, but also the fact that the malachim, we're supposed to be emulating a malach when we daven Shmona Esrei, and the malachim are described in Yechezkel as standing.
Standing.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, angels don't have knees.